Charles, we get around.
Talking about my generation.
Things ain't too look awful.
Talking about my generation.
I hope I die before I get old.
Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Why does high school stay with us forever? What is it about this period of our lives that make it seem more meaningful and memorable than any other? Our guest this hour does research as an evolutionary psychologist, and he says that many factors interact to make our teenage memories so vivid. The main collision between the hardwiring of our brains that took place across several millions of years of evolution and the odd social bubble created by high school poses an unprecedented social challenge to our prehistoric minds. Our guest this hour is Professor Frank McAndrew. He's a social psychologist and a professor at Knox College. His Psychology Today magazine blog and other online publications attract all kinds of readers every year, and he was identified as one of the key individuals in the history of environmental psychology by a survey of researchers in the field. He's been featured all over the place on NPR, the BBC, New York Times, Today Show, and he is our guest this hour. We'll be welcoming phone calls because I'm sure that when I say high school, a lot of things are going to come to your mind, and we'll talk about those this hour. 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, email talk at WPR.org, Facebook, The Kathleen Dunn Show. Frank McAndrew, thank you so much for being with us. Hi.
Well, thanks for having me, Kathleen.
Yeah, it'll be great fun and very interesting, I'm sure. Well, let's go back to these prehistoric times. What kind of hardwiring and how did we live when we were teenagers in those years that may clash with how we live now?
Well, being a teenager then wasn't quite what it is now, because you weren't stuck away with a whole bunch of other teenagers in this building for 8 hours a day.
Right.
We're living your life with people of all ages in a relatively small group. So from what we can tell, most human groups during most of our history were about 150 or 200 people. You knew everybody personally, and you were related to a lot of these people. And so the world was very different then. But what made the teenage years so important was this was the time of life where you were going to be sorted out in the pecking order for all time in this group. You didn't just leave groups and go somewhere else. This was going to be your life.
Mm.
And so it really was, from an evolutionary point of view, kind of a life and death thing to establish with your peers who you were. You know, your status as a hunter or a warrior if you were a male, your worth as a mate and reliability if you were a female. And, you know, if you came out on the short end during those years, you weren't going to turn it around at 40 and suddenly be somebody better. It was kind of set. And so it's a very emotional, grim struggle, prehistorically speaking. Now, the world is very different for teenagers today, but those same buttons in the brain get pushed by all of the same things that were pushed back then.
Hmm. So you're still trying to prove yourself as a warrior, a hunter, or a football player, a star athlete, or a cheerleader.
Yeah.
And looking really good because you're still in that. Unfortunately, it's changing a little bit, but it's all sorted out as to how attractive you're going to become a mate and to have children, right?
That's correct. And yes, now we can leave that high school and go to college on the other side of the country, move away, start over. And you're not really thinking of that, though, when you're 16 or 17, right? I mean, that the emotional reaction to events are the same emotional reactions you would have if you were going to be trapped with these same people for the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm. Why is conflict with parents rather inevitable during these years?
Well, the parents are just as invested in the success of their children as the children themselves are, but the parents have a more long-term view of things. They understand that the game gets played over decades, and it's not what happens this week so much that matters, and they want to see the child positioning himself or herself for success down the line. So there's a great concern about doing well in school so one can have a good career, so one can have status, and you want to associate with the right people. And the teenager, on the other hand, just is worried about what's everybody thinking about them right now and what are they going to do this weekend. And the decisions they make tend to be much more short-term and impulsive, and hence the conflict. Both of them are looking out for their own best interests, but there's some disagreement about what those are.
Mm-hmm. Why is this a time, I've never understood this fully, to take all these risks in life that really might be very damaging to you? They can hurt you.
Correct. And that's especially true for males. There's something that psychologists call the young male syndrome. If you are you familiar with the Darwin Awards?
Yes.
Given
yes.
every year for people who are killed doing ridiculous things?
Yes.
The winners are almost always male, and I tallied them up one time. And I'll just make up numbers, but they're pretty close. Over the last 5 years, there were something like 35 males and 5 females who won these, and 3 of the 5 women who won them won them because they were talked into having sex under very suspicious circumstances by males. So it's very much a male thing. And the idea is, if you're going to display your fitness, your vigor, the way to do that is to take risks. And if you can take risks and survive them, what you're really signaling is, I've got some pretty good genes here. I'm a person of considerable worth.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't take the risks, what you're advertising is perhaps you're not up to the challenge.
Well, don't we outgrow that evolutionary hardwired nature because the risks, we don't need to take the same kinds of risks we took millions of years ago, right?
No, that's correct. We wouldn't, but the only way it goes away is if for some reason there's now selective pressure to favor people who don't take the risks.
Ah.
And so if we still admire the individual who's taking the risks, and let's face it, we do, right?
Mm-hmm.
The people we, you know, when there's a celebrity made out of the person who does some death-defying feat and survives it, or accomplishes some incredible athletic achievement, we don't have awards for the person who hides in their house or stays on the couch all day. You know, it's just not something that we find attractive. It just hasn't been long enough. In the grand scheme of human history, it's just not been long enough that we've lived in the world we're in now.
Mm-hmm. And what about this? I'm not even sure what this word means, so tell me what it means, what it meant perhaps, if we have any idea of that a million years ago, and what it means now. This popularity becoming an obsession, what does it mean to be popular?
Well, I think to be popular, different people will define that in different ways, but essentially it means to be admired and desired by one's peers. Not necessarily liked, notice.
Hmm.
But if you have respect and are considered a person of worth, then you're popular. If people want to be associated with you, you're popular. And those were the things that would have translated into success throughout human history. If I'm a popular male, I will attract more mates and more desirable mates, and hence will outcompete the guy who is not popular.
And to be a person of worth means having what?
Well, it means having those qualities that are valued by others. It means you're signaling good genes. It means you're signaling the character traits that would be desirable in an ally or a mate. So am I trustworthy? Am I honest? Am I capable? And if you're going to mate with me, am I carrying any kind of weird genes around that are not going to be good for your children or
mm-hmm.
not?
Mm-hmm.
And by advertising health and all of those other things, then, yeah, you're sending the right signals.
Mm-hmm. Do you go to your high school reunions?
I never have.
Oh, you're kidding me.
No?
You of all people. Why?
Well, I mean, I've only recently started thinking about this. And I live very far away from where my high school is.
Uh-huh.
I grew up in eastern Pennsylvania, and I now live in Illinois.
Right.
And I would go to one of my high school reunions if I happened to be there when one was going on. But, you know, it just hasn't happened. And I don't think they've had that many of them, actually.
Mm-hmm. Maybe they will after they read what you wrote about this.
Yeah.
Either that or they won't want to have it or they won't want you to come because you'll be analyzing everybody, right?
Well, maybe, yeah. Yeah, that's part of the problem.
Yeah.
And for me personally, this whole, I'm 63 years old now. And I would say, like most people, I went through most of my adult life working on my career, raising kids, and not really thinking a whole lot about the past in high school. But somewhere in my mid-50s, about the time Facebook came into being, and we started reconnecting with people, I started to think about this. Whatever happened to all those people that I once knew?
Uh-huh.
And I found that even though I hadn't thought about things for a decade, the memories came flooding back.
Huh.
I could picture the faces. I could remember the names. I could remember the most mundane little incidents that took place on everyday high school days. But, and yet, when my wife and I would have conversations about something that happened 5 years ago, or was it 8 years ago, or what was that person's name, I found the memories from things that were much more recent were much blurrier.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what kind of got me interested in this whole issue of why is that stuff from that time so clear and memorable?
Yeah, because we're navigating who we are, because we're really, because of all the things that you just mentioned, we're finding out who we are in terms of other people's eyes and who we're going to be in terms of a mate and how attractive we are, et cetera, et cetera. It's all happening, all the sexual awakening, it's all happening during those years, isn't it?
Yes, and the more emotional something is, the easier it is to remember. And let's face it, almost all of the stuff that happens during that time is really emotional. Whether it's good or bad, it's memorable and it's exciting. And so it sticks with you. You're hyper-vigilant about feedback about yourself, getting back to the whole issue of popularity and so forth. You're so sensitive to any information about who likes you and who doesn't, and whether you look good or whether you don't, or whether you're fitting in or whether you don't. You worry about it much more than you do later in life.
Mm-hmm.
Because people who didn't worry about those things just didn't do very well.
And you, I know you live far away, but you mentioned Facebook, which leads me to believe that you looked up some people who are in high school. Do we have a need to find out how we stack up many years later when we're 62 or 52 or whatever to who we were when we were 17?
I think so. Something I mentioned in the article is social comparison theory. We're always kind of paying attention to other people to figure out how good we're doing. Right? When you're on the job, how well are you doing compared to your coworkers? In any aspect of life, how am I doing? And the thing that makes people from high school such a good touchstone is you all started in the same place, you're all the same age, and so if you're looking at people who kind of started off at the same starting line as you did, there's no other group like it.
Do you think most people look longingly at their high school years, or do most people try to discard those years as best they can?
I think most people are at one of those two extremes. I think the minority of people will be the ones who just say, high school, it was all right.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're more likely to have people say, oh, my God, those were the worst years of my life.
Really?
Or, oh, yeah, that was great. And the research indicates the people who think it was great outnumber the ones who think it was terrible. There's something psychologists call the Pollyanna principle. We tend to remember positive things better than negative things.
Mm-hmm.
Not that we don't remember the negative things, but the positive things are more accessible to us. And so when people talk about the good old days, that's the reason it's happening. Have you ever noticed people will often, if you're young, people will always start sentences with the phrase, won't it be great when?
Mm-hmm.
Won't it be great when I get out of high school and I get to college? Won't it be great when I get out of college and get a job? Won't it be great when I find somebody to get married? The greatness is always going to be something that happens in the future. And I'm now getting to the point in life where I regularly hear people start sentences with the phrase, wasn't it great when?
Right, I know.
But I hardly ever have heard anybody say, isn't this great right now? For some reason, the present is always just sort of boring or stressful. And the past was better, and the future is going to be better if we can just get through the right now.
Right. You write in your piece, probably the last time in life when people of all sorts are thrown together for no other reason than they're the same age and they live in the same area. That's high school. After high school, studies have shown people tend to sort themselves out according to what?
According to what?
Yeah, what happens to us after we leave high school?
Well, we sort ourselves out on all kinds of things, okay? Some of us go off to college. Some of us go into the military. Some of us just go out and get a job. We start hanging around solely with people who kind of share our political and religious views. We stratify ourselves according to intelligence and other talents. And so your world starts to become full of people that are much more like you. And yes, in high school, you gravitate towards friends that are very much like you as well. But you're still in this big holding pen with all kinds of people that you ordinarily would not have associated with. So that creates another dynamic that you kind of avoid in your day-to-day life. You're not as segregated as you will be later on.
Mm-hmm. We're going to welcome phone calls. High school, what comes to mind in your mind when you hear the word high school? Our guest, Frank McAndrew, is an evolutionary psychologist professor at Knox College, where Lincoln and Douglas did a debate. I sat in Abraham Lincoln's chair. I had a hard time getting out of it, not because it was so low to the ground, but because it was Abraham Lincoln's chair. It's an interesting school. Fine Lincoln scholars at that school as well, and fine psychology professors, too. Frank McAndrew is a social psychologist, professor at Knox College. He has a Psychology Today magazine blog, and he does many other online publications. And he is with us this hour to talk about these years of our lives and also to look at what we're hardwired to be when we're teenagers and how that informs who we are in high school and may also clash with who we are when we're in high school. Here's our phone number. Lines are open for you at this very moment, 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org. Facebook, The Kathleen Dunn Show, or on Twitter at K Dunn Show. Are those years some of the best years of your life? Do you have, if you're well out of high school, really strong memories, good memories, bad memories of high school? Do you still socialize with people you went to high school with? Are they still in your group? Why is popularity so important? And all these risky behaviors, problems with parents, etc., that's all what we're discussing this hour. To you momentarily on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. High school, I mean, is what we talk about this hour now, and we go to phone calls, starting with Ron in Sauk City. Hi, Ron.
Hey, how are you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good.
Good.
I'm 62 years old, and I listened to your program about age last hour and found it terribly interesting. And I find this man's program really interesting. High school, for me, was pretty much a blur. It was the 60s, and I was involved in a lot of things I should not have been. But what it did for me was it gave me a resolve to find something better. I moved on. I went in. I did a 24-year military career that was successful, and I just really enjoyed that. But when I have friends, many friends from high school still. I live in roughly the same geographical area, so I run into people. But it was kind of funny because popular wasn't popular in the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
Being popular was kind of like, oh, well, okay. The cheerleaders actually got made fun of, which I find kind of interesting today. But it was the 60s. You know, if you weren't rebelling against something, you weren't there.
Right. That's a really interesting point. What about the times in which we live and how they affect our memories and our behavior in high school?
Yep. And Ron and I would have been in high school at the same time, but our experience was quite different. I went to a conservative Catholic high school where, you wanted to be a football player and you wanted to be a cheerleader. And, of course, you did feel the need to rebel at some point, but the rebels were sort of the disaffected minority. They were not considered popular.
And I would imagine, though, that Ron's experience was probably had many more people a part of what he was talking about than where you were going to school, don't you think?
Well, it's hard to say. I really don't know about that.
Hmm.
What I would argue is that wherever you went to high school, to be popular, there were certain rules to follow. And if Ron is correct, you would not want to be a cheerleader because that would make you unpopular. So there was still pressure to do whatever was judged to be the right thing. And if it was cool to be a rebel, well, then that's what there was pressure to be. And the riskier and more rebellious you could be, the more you would be admired and the more popular you would be.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess I would disagree that people aren't concerned about popularity. The criterion for popularity might be different from place to place.
Ron, thanks very much for the call. Do you have statistics? He said he lives in the area where he went to high school and runs into people all the time. Do you have any numbers on how many people stay within 10 miles of the high school they went to?
I don't. No, I don't. If I were just to ballpark it from my own experience, I would put it at maybe 50% staying in the same general area. But I don't have any statistics I can point to that say that's the case. I will say, though, that the people that I know, including some of my relatives who did stay where they were, do tend to still have their high school friends as the best friends in life they've got now.
Mm-hmm.
There's something about those friendships that persist if you can stay in touch with each other on a regular basis.
Right. Mel in Minocqua, hi.
Hello. This is Mel.
Hi, Mel.
Yes, hi. I have a little rebuttal to your guest. Very interesting subjects that he's picked to write about. But I believe a few moments ago he was talking about how people, after they get out of school and they stay in touch with people, how they tend to wind up comparing themselves to where they are at versus where their peers from high school are at. And I have, on a personal level, I've kind of found that could be kind of rather self-defeating, because if you wind up playing the game of comparisons, you may wind up feeling one down more often than not. If you don't compare yourself to other people and just set your own goals and what your own direction is, I think you'll wind up feeling better about yourself. Second point, many times, I think you talked about high school reunions and about not going to high school reunions. My 50th will be coming up in a year from now. My thoughts about high school reunions and why people do or maybe don't show up, I guess I would say, is because many of them probably don't feel very successful. Maybe they've been spending too much time comparing themselves to their peers. That's what I have to say.
All right. Thank you. Professor McAndrew.
By the way, I wouldn't disagree with Mel about that.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't mean to imply that this comparing yourself to other people is healthy or makes you feel good. I'm just saying people do it. And the point he made, I think, is correct. People don't show up because they don't feel successful, precisely because they are engaged in this social comparison. So I'm not arguing that it's necessarily a good thing or something that's going to make you feel good, but there's this compulsion to do it, to check in.
Thanks, Mel, very much for your call. Andrew in La Crosse is next. Hi, Andrew.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi. So before you were talking about masculine culture a little bit and how men are kind of taught to, it's hardwired for them to be more risky and things like that. As a millennial now, I feel like I'm seeing male culture shift and what it means to be male or female. I'm sure you guys can kind of speak from an older generation and kind of see how my generation is changing things. Even Ron, too, was talking about how he had seen how he had different experiences. And I was wondering if the way society is kind of set up around male or female culture or how high school is set up too, kind of the sociological environment, how that has effects on people's memories of high school, and if you take a look at other cultures and different aspects in that. So that's all I have. Thanks.
Thanks, Andrew.
Well, it sounds like what we're talking about now is it the same thing to be a man or a woman at different periods of time or in different cultures? And I guess I would say the concerns that people have about measuring themselves in comparison to others and trying to position oneself for success are sort of a universal thing, but different societies have different rules about what it will be that defines you as successful or desirable. And I think different periods in history will as well, but that impulse, I would think, would be sort of the same.
Mm-hmm. I want to talk a little bit about, because this happens to all of us in high school, that you sort of get categorized that you're a loser or you're on the in-group or you're in the artistic group or whatever. When you're in that kind of designation, how hard is it to overcome that and to rebuild yourself once you leave high school? Are a lot of those classifications lifelong for a lot of people?
I think it will be easier to get out of them if you leave that place where people think of you that way.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the awkward things about high school reunions. When your previous caller said that people are sometimes avoiding high school reunions because they don't feel successful, another reason to avoid them is if you go back after 50 years and you haven't seen these people, the only thing they remember of you is what you were in high school. And you may be completely different now, and you may have completely changed yourself, but you recognize that when you meet them, their first impulse is going to be to think of you as you were.
Sure.
And that can be very uncomfortable. You know, if you used to be this way and now you're this way, right away you've got this hurdle to overcome. But I think if you stick around with the same people forever, it's going to be harder to climb out of that, because once people get this, psychologists call it a schema, you know, it's sort of an organizational framework for thinking about people, it's kind of hard to break that down.
We go next to Dean in Pulaski. Hi, Dean.
Hi. I'm glad I got a chance to call. I'm very intrigued by the subject. I'm a licensed psychotherapist in Wisconsin, and I really like the evolutionary psychology perspective. I pretty much that's the way I interpret behavior, is how it goes back to a reason, you know, why we're doing it regarding evolution. And I found that I had a lot of problems going back for high school reunions after I quit drinking. And I found that it was very painful to let go of that, because I was kind of like a party person. I really, that's who my friends were. And I also found that we had changed, you know, like politically. I remember a friend of mine, you know, I like to work with people, you know, who are on a lower economic scale. And he was talking about how he knows so many people in Seattle, Washington, where he's a lawyer, where they take advantage of the system, you know, and it put me off. So it took me about 10 years to get over it. It was very painful.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah, it really did, you know, because I think it had something to do with quitting drinking and missing the fun and missing the friendship, but you're also, you know, when you're young and you drink a lot, you do a lot of stupid things. And every time I'd go back, it was like I was right back at the age of 17 or 18 doing those stupid things. And my friends would remind me of that, and I would not like that. And
right.
So now I feel very free. I feel like I don't worry about that, about going to my hometown. And I just wonder how would you look at that evolutionary-wise? Because I feel like there's a lot of people like me, I think. Mm.
And before you get an answer, you feel as though you don't want to go to any more reunions? Have you cut those out of your life, Dean?
Yeah, absolutely. Right. I'll never go again.
Mm-hmm. Professor McAndrew?
I feel good about that. I'm happy.
Right. All right.
Well, not even to think of it in evolutionary terms, but as a therapist, you're probably well aware of the discomfort people experience when their ideal self and their actual self don't line up. And the problem I think you experience when you go back is you're dealing with people who have a conception of you as one kind of person that's completely out of sync with what you now think of yourself as being. And that tension creates a lot of discomfort, and it's easier to just not go there.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, Dean, for the call. Let's talk about this a little bit. You say that natural selection shaped an innate curiosity about specific people and a memory to store this information. So we needed to remember who treated us well and who didn't. And the more emotional the memory, the less likely we are to forget it.
Correct, yes. We're programmed to really be fascinated about information about individuals. All you have to do is look at the nightly news, and it's just a story about people, right? The girl that survived the shark attack, the two-year-old killed by the alligator. What's Donald Trump doing? Who is this mass shooter? We're fascinated by the details of specific individuals, because that's the kind of skill we needed to have to be socially successful. I could not if somebody swindled me or cheated on me in some way or other, I needed to remember that, and I needed to hold a grudge so that that person could not take advantage of me again. And it's kind of hard to let that stuff go. That's another problem with high school reunions. You remember all of the things that happened when you were 16. You haven't seen these people in 40 or 50 years, and yes, we've all changed. But there you go, running into this person, and the first emotion you experience is this resentment or this grudge from 40 years ago.
And it stays with you forever?
Well, it's hard to shake it because it is such an emotional thing. People who easily let go of those things and got cheated on again and again and again just didn't do very well. We were really sorted out in our ability to remember who was reliable and who wasn't, and who we could trust and who we couldn't trust. And hence, yes, these things stick with you.
Let's go next to Tony in Egg Harbor. Hello, Tony.
Good afternoon, Kathleen. I, too, am 59, turning 60 this year, and I really have mixed feelings about high school because in high school I was a big, fat zero.
Mm.
I wasn't an academic. I wasn't an athlete, couldn't get the girl. But there was something inside of me knew that I did have what it took, but I just didn't know how to achieve it. So for the last 42 years, and it's been exhausting, I've been proving to everybody that I was right and they were wrong.
Oh, Tony.
And everything that I do, and maybe it's been my motivation or it's been my curse, I'm not sure. I even had a radio show in Chicago with the hopes of my high school chums listening. So really, there isn't a day that I get up and have to prove myself, and it's been exhausting. And you know, your last caller, Dean, seemed like he was able to free himself from that. I don't know if I ever will.
Hmm. Can you help him, Frank?
Well, I wish I could, but yes, you're sort of at the extreme end of exactly what we're talking about, right? Those years had such a profound effect on you. And as you said, it may not be all that negative. It has sort of prompted you to do all kinds of good things with your life. But, it would be so great if we could just let go of that old thing. I hope my high school friends are listening, too, by the way.
So. Do you? That's interesting. But, you know, he shouldn't have to every day try to work on overcoming that feeling like a nothing so many years ago.
No, he shouldn't. But my only point is, the fact that a person can feel like a nothing for so long just because of what happened during those years is the thing that's interesting. It's very unfortunate that that can happen to people.
Yes, it is.
And I was interested in the question of why is it that something that happens during those years makes you feel like a big fat zero, but something that happened to you when you're 40 doesn't.
Right, right, exactly. All right, Tony, feel better. It's a long time ago. That may help. I don't know if it helps or not. Some of these things stay with us in a really deep level. Reed in Clintonville is next. Hi.
Yes, good afternoon. So years ago, I remember hearing that most people lived within 50 miles of where they were born. I believe that if you live within 50 miles of where you went to high school, you normally just hang out with those same people that you hung out with in high school if you still maintain contact, that is. And I have been to just about, I'm 75 years old, I've been to just about every high school class reunion, and just this past year we had a 75 reunion, which means everybody in the class turning 75 years of age, plus or minus. And, I have never felt inferior to anybody, and I'm a guy that actually quit high school, got my GED in the Army, and then went to college, but I still am considered part of that high school class. And I've looked at many of these people over the years. They have lifestyles that I do not envy. Some are very successful and very good, and some are not. But I feel successful and happy in my life, and I think that is the important thing. I guess I've lost a couple of other issues that I wanted to address, but maybe we'll just leave it at there and say that as those people that you, as a high school student, hung out with, and as they move on or pass away, you find other resources to enrich your life, And it doesn't have to be the popular, quote-unquote, kids from high school.
Yeah. Wait, was it a big deal for you to leave high school, Reed?
Well, what happened is one day my friend, or two friends, knocked on my door. I was at home living with my parents, and they said, hey, let's join the Army. So I said, okay. So I quit high school, joined the Army.
Wow.
And got my GED then in the military and went on to college and graduate school. And I'm very, very happy with my life.
Mm-hmm.
So that's it, I guess, Kathleen. Thank you.
All right. No, thank you.
All right.
Frank, what do you say?
Well, but it sounds, I can't take issue with anything that's being said by any of the callers. But the point I want to keep coming back to is how interested we are in what the people we went to high school with are doing. Whether we feel good or bad about it, or whether, you know, that's extra. It's just this, we're more interested in what happened to those people than we are to people we met at other times in our life.
Mm-hmm. Let's welcome more phone calls. We're talking this hour and welcoming your phone calls for Professor Frank McAndrew. He's a social psychologist, evolutionary psychologist, professor at Knox College in Illinois. He has a Psychology Today magazine blog and gets a lot of readers every year. His research has been featured in many media outlets, including NPR and the BBC, New York Times. He's with us this hour to talk about our high school years and what is it about those years that so much happens to us during those years. Why is it that high school stays with us, not always in the best of ways, forever? For better or for worse, he writes in a recent article, many of us never forget high school. Unrequited romantic crushes, chronic embarrassment, desperate struggles for popularity, sexual awakening, parental pressure, and above all else, competition, social, athletic, and academic. What is it about this period of our lives that makes it seem more meaningful and memorable than any other? We welcome your phone calls. The number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Lines are open for you right now. You can also send an email at talk@wpr.org. And our Facebook page, where we always love to read your comments, is The Kathleen Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our phone number is 800-486-8655 as we talk about high school. I wonder if, I know this isn't the focus of the article, but for everybody graduates from high school, or most people do eventually, those years of transition when we're forming to a completely different setup in society, are those because of the structure of high school all being the same age in the same place for 4 years? Is it hard for us to move from that world into a world that we create for ourselves? Professor?
Well, I think it's hard to make that first step because you're sort of part of a network and there's familiarity. And it's a big deal to go away to college or to move off and take a job somewhere else or to join the military. I think once you're out there and surrounded by a new peer group, it may not be as hard. But I think taking that first step is the tough one.
Mm-hmm.
For sure.
We go next to Josie in Sheboygan. Hi, Josie.
Hi. I was going to talk not just about my high school days, which was really not too exciting except for the people I met, a couple of them. And one of them was Errol Flynn's daughter. I don't know if it was his oldest one, but her name was Deirdre. And I got to know her, and she lived in Laurel Canyon, all different kinds of people of different backgrounds. I mean, California is that way, you know. I mean, we used to go to the movies walking down Hollywood Boulevard, you know, put our hands and feet at the Grauman's Chinese Theater. Not called that anymore, but
right.
we used to help. She didn't like her mother very much. She was a mean woman. And I don't know which wife of Errol. Do you remember Errol Flynn?
Yeah, but let's go back to high school. What, did you
okay,
like high school,
well,
Josie?
Well, it was, I really didn't connect. I went to Hollywood High.
Uh-huh.
And I really didn't connect. It was mostly the junior high. And people were very, very conceited. If you were a pretty girl, you know, everybody wanted
right.
to be in the movies and all that. It
right.
was totally different than it is.
out in
here
Sheboygan.
At Old Wisconsin.
Yeah, I would imagine that certain high schools have certain kind of atmospheres, Professor McAndrew.
Oh, yes. I mean, a place like Hollywood High has got to be hyper-competitive, I would
right.
think. Yep, absolutely. And I think the battleground is different from high school to high school, you know, what it is people are competing for. And some are going to be more ruthless. And a lot of it is driven by parents. If you've got a lot of highly successful, competitive parents who want their kids to be just as successful as they are, that can create a real kind of toxic atmosphere.
Thanks, Josie, for the call. Matt is next in Green Bay. Hi, Matt.
Hi. How are you?
Good. You?
Never had it so good.
Excellent.
I actually wanted to segue off what was just mentioned about parents. And I think it's no different between the family and the high school atmosphere that you grew up in, that you have to put on these personas and you grow up in controlled environments and you're so much is expected of you and you innately and inherently want to succeed above everyone else. And until you can get free of that concept, you're never going to really move on. And I think it takes people, well, for me, it took my late 20s and now in my early 30s before I even begin to grasp who I actually am. And high school has no shape or form on that.
Frank.
Yeah. And we're focusing on high school, but I guess I want to make the point. It's what happens during the early part of your life, anywhere from the mid-teens up through the mid-20s, that is so memorable and emotional for us. But, yeah, I think the problem with high school when you get older is that you have changed, and it's hard to go back, but you still remember the you that you were. Often with sort of embarrassment, but and I don't know how many people really like their 15 or 16-year-old self when they think about them. Yeah, you're much different in your early 30s.
Yeah, early 30s is a completely different time of life, isn't it? Matt, thanks so much for the call. Paul in Madison, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I found middle school, I went to school in Milwaukee. I live in Madison currently, but I was raised in Milwaukee. And I found middle school to be the most traumatic time in the person's life.
I'm with you on that.
Yeah,
oh,
me too.
Yes.
Me too.
I was bullied. I mean, when I hear the articles about bullying now, mine was the blueprint for what was going on. And high school wasn't really challenging. It was more just one great big personality contest, and I was in a very successful high school. It was Washington High School in Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm.
It was 50 years ago, a long time ago. And we had more National Merit Scholars in our school than the rest of the Wisconsin combined. So it was intellectually competitive, but it was that paled in comparison to the social competition that went on. And I think after watching my kids go to school, it was worse back in the 60s than it is now. I'm not sure how bad it is now, but it was incredible then. So I feel as though, if anything, I would say I was scarred by my middle school and high school education time. Went on to college, and I've received a bunch of degrees since then. But I think I still feel a real hollow, negative feeling about those years of my life and the education I was supposed to achieve.
Well, that's too bad, Paul. I bet a lot of people share those sentiments, though, don't they, Professor McAndrew?
Yes, and I'm struck by the range of responses we've gotten today.
Yes.
But how everybody's on the same page with how memorable and emotional those years are, for good or for bad. We've got a lot of callers who haven't been in high school for 40 or 50 years, and they're talking about it like it happened last week.
Yes.
Whereas if we were doing a show on, remember the years between 40 and 45, I think your phone might not be ringing quite as much.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're just, stuff doesn't stick with you as much. But junior high, yeah, that's in that window for sure.
Somebody's got to do something about junior high. I don't know what you do if you need to make it K through 12 most schools, but talk about putting high school kids of a certain age together for 4 years. Junior high kids, it's just such an incredibly hard time to be living, I think. It's just rough those years.
Yes, I used for a few years I was a junior high school soccer coach.
Oh, were you?
And just being with those kids for you know, an hour or two at a time on something they allegedly wanted to be doing was totally exhausting. I can't imagine, you know, spending a whole day with them in a classroom.
Right. Thank you very much for your call. Bao is next in Michigan. Hi, Bao.
Hi there.
Hi.
Just talking about high school and everything. You know, I just remember, you know, talking about grade school. I actually enjoyed grade school. It was a lot easier for me. But then going into high school, it just seemed like everybody just kept changing. And it was so rapidly fast. And, you know, there was just different social cliques all over the place. And I just really felt outcasted a lot of times because, you know, I was doing different stuff than what they were doing. Even though I was involved in sports and activities and stuff like that, I just didn't drink. I didn't go off and do those parties and stuff. And so now it's really difficult for me to, like, go to those reunions and do that kind of stuff. And I tried going to my last reunion, which was only a five-year reunion. And, you know, when you show up and everything and all they're doing is drinking really hard, and then all of a sudden they're going to an after party and everybody's doing drugs and everything, at least that's what I understand happened. I didn't go. But it's just really difficult for me because of the experiences that I had in high school where I tried staying away from that stuff.
Yeah.
And where they're still doing it. It was just, it's very difficult for me to go to a reunion because I know, like how they were saying earlier, you just resort back to your 18-year-old self and just keep doing all that stupid stuff. And, well, that was never me. And so it's just really difficult for me to be around that kind of stuff. Even though I want to go see those people, I want to know what's going on with them, it's difficult for me to be able to be around them.
Right. Maybe you just do Facebook, right? Or you make a phone call every now and then.
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, I live in the same town and everything like that, and I see them around. But, you know, they're not always like that or anything like that. It's just, there's just that awkwardness, I guess, because of the person that you were and the person that they were.
Yes.
And even though you see them slowly changing, every time you go to that reunion, well, they just want to jump back into that old
self.
To
who they were. Yeah, that's true, isn't it, Professor McCandrick?
Well, yeah, that's what they have in common. That's how they used to be with each other, and now they're with each other again, and it's the most natural thing in the world to just do what you did.
Let's go to Joe in Port Edwards next. Hi, Joe.
Hi. Hey, I was a service brat during the 60s, and I grew up overseas. I went to four different high schools during my high school career.
Ooh, that's
in
hard.
Two different countries.
Oh, my.
Yeah. So, you know, learning to make new friends was just natural, and that was pretty much the way that my elementary years and junior high went as well. But the thing that I'm hearing today on the show that really is amazing to me is how people are easily able to connect if they have grown up in the same town. But for those of us that were, you know, service brats, the internet has been just a fantastic way to make reconnections. Without it, I don't know how I would have ever found many of my friends.
Yeah. I imagine it's very hard for young people, Frank, to have to enter a different high school all the time.
I would think so, yes, because it's like introducing the new chicken to the barnyard, right? You have to figure out where you fit in the pecking order. And so all of us experience the trauma of finding one's place in high school. If you keep moving around, you re-experience it over and over and over again. By the way, I was born on an army base in Germany myself. My father was a career soldier.
Hmm.
But I did not move around nearly as much as Joe did.
Mm-hmm. And we have time for one more phone call. Jerry in Madison, about a minute left. Hi, Jerry.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I found this fascinating to listen to your cast. I went to school in the 50s in Canada in high school. And there was a five-year high school. A lot of people even went six because the whole province took the same exams and about 5% of the people went on to college then. Mm. So it was a wonderful experience and all parts of it. And I go out of my way now. We have a reunion every summer. I live thousands of miles away from there now, but I go back all the time. All my kids and my grandkids have met my old friends.
Oh.
Very positive. The only thing negative I remember was I really didn't understand girls. Although I didn't see it as a negative back then. I was too ignorant, I guess. But when I run into the old girlfriends now, I realize how really naive and stupid I was. But it still, to me, wasn't a negative.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm very interested in your guest perspective on this. Friends from that era, to me, I can honestly say I still have about 40 or 50 of them
that
are close friends.
That's amazing. And there's a positive story, and we'll have to end on that.
A good way to end.
Yeah, it is. That's incredible. Thank you, Professor McAndrew, so much for being with us.
Thank you very much for having me.
Frank McAndrew, he's a psychologist and a professor at Knox College in Illinois. Thanks to KP Whaley for producing the hour and to KP for doing on-air production. Tomorrow during this hour, books, summer books. Daniel Golden from Boswell Books will be here with books, suggestions, and lots of fun.